for our more dreadful sacrifice.
Who's it, huh?
The music you're listening to is completely electronic.
Only a fool would ignore this.
I'd like to demonstrate for you some of the rather more weird kinds of sounds.
See how relaxed you're getting?
Every Sunday night at 7 o'clock here on CITR 101.9 FM is More Than Human, your weekly guide to all that is new, weird and wonderful in the world of electronic music. So please join me, Gareth Moses, for electronic music old and new, inane comments and the occasional sacrifice. More Than Human on CITR.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous, you could not go any further, you know. You had to find a way to use it.
Curated by Barbara Chirinos in partnership with Viff Van City Theater, the annual Black History Month film series shines a spotlight on African North American film and history. This year's program encompasses music, political protest, spiritual, emotional, enterprise, and endeavor. The centerpiece of Black History Month at Van City Theater is the exclusive Vancouver premiere of the Academy Award-nominated documentary I Am Not Your Negro, screening from February 24th. Other highlights include Julie Dash's seminal Daughters of the Dust, the music films Molly Blues and Sign of the Times, and a new Canadian documentary about the untold history of black hockey players, Soul on Ice.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. It's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by the White Noise After Show, which is a bit of chit-chat, cool music, talking about the weekly events, maybe some topics from within our show itself. We do all sorts, don't we, guys? We got Connor and Sierra in. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Quite good. Probably better than you after no sleep.
Yeah, well, self-imposed. You know, I've got an exam. Start studying for a week. I'll study the day before for 12
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, it's weird. Some people might suggest you do better on an exam having got some sleep.
Bollocks. but yeah, so no, we'll definitely be here for the next hour. So sit back, relax, and it's time for some white noise.
Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by the Super Bowl, where people watch people get crippled whilst experiencing crippling heartburn. First up tonight, someone's in court.
You have been charged with the murder of David Williams on the 9th of December, 2016. How do you plead?
Not guilty.
You have chosen to represent yourself, so what is your defense?
Well, it's hard to explain, but you just had to be there.
Pardon?
Well, you know how some things make sense in the moment, but later they look like murder?
No.
Oh. Well, look, I didn't kill the guy, I swear.
You were found covered in the victim's blood, holding a knife, and saying, I stabbed him. It wasn't self-defense. I'd do it again.
That was sarcasm. You're reading the quote wrong. See? You had to be there.
Look, you need to provide a rational defense immediately, or you are facing a lengthy penal sentence.
Oh, you mean like I'd have to wear a chastity belt or something?
Penal, I said.
Shit, I really should have hired a lawyer. Ugh.
Just try to explain to the court why it is you shouldn't go to jail.
Fine. Okay, look, I'm a simple man with a simple plan. T-shirt.
Not really appropriate attire for court.
Noted. And I, Harry Manson Hitler Dahmer III, asked the jury to look deep into their hearts and remember a time, perhaps when they were much younger, when they accidentally stabbed a total stranger three times.
I've been to prison a lot. Only way I could visit my dad. He's not in prison. He just likes to stand outside the fence and goad the inmates. Next out tonight is a production meeting.
Thanks for coming in, Greg. We've read the script, and all of us here at HBO love it. Don't we, guys?
All right.
Yeah.
It's great.
The rawness, the originality, the amount of swearing, this is what we do best at HBO.
I'm glad you like it.
One tiny but deal-breaking note.
Uh-oh?
There aren't enough boobs.
There is no boobs.
Exactly.
So what?
Greg, have you ever watched HBO?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, there is always boobs. Game of Thrones, Sopranos, True Detectives, even the Young Pope, second scene.
Right, but my show is about the Holocaust.
And? They don't have to be the greatest boobs, but all that undernourishment has to make a few women pretty tall.
Look, I think it might take away from the message of the piece, though.
Not if it's done tastefully. Maybe in this scene here. When the hero is thinking of his wife in the other camp, he could have a little sex dream. Him and her, in a meadow. Maybe a nipple slips out. Very tasteful.
No, I think him crying every night for a year gets the message across just as well.
All right, but no one is going to get a hard-on watching a man cry. Well, not many people.
Look, I have other options. BET offered me a deal if I gave the lead to Ice Cube.
We could get you the better parts of NWA.
Look, I'm sorry. I will not jeopardize the integrity of my program.
All right, look, we are HBO. We are meant to be titillating.
Well, how about we compromise with, I don't know, a little bit of ball sack?
Who do you think we are? Bravo!
There's already too many boobs on TV lately. Well, you know, when you include the entire Trump cabinet. Next up tonight is an interview with His Greatness, Sir Patrick Stewart.
I played all the great characters, King Richard, Ebenezer Scrooge, the poo emoji. But now it's time for my greatest challenge.
Oh, you're finally going to play Macbeth? Aren't you a little old?
No. I promised Kenneth Branagh the role is his for an eternity after I lost that bet. I really did think I could pick up a maraschino cherry with my butt cheeks.
Right, so what's the role?
Well, it's the role I've been training for a lifetime. I'll appear in the Royal Shakespeare's Company's spring production of Romeo and Juliet as Juliet.
Juliet, but you're neither young or female.
Hence why it will be the greatest challenge of my career.
You think an audience will believe a 75-year-old man is a 13-year-old girl?
Yes, I will. Make it so. Did you see what I did there?
Yes, everyone did.
Yes, you see, I'll be the most convincing Juliet ever, since, see what I can do? I can just tuck it between my legs.
I loved Patrick Stewart in X-Men. I really believed for a second I wasn't watching a shit movie. Next up tonight, someone is learning.
Keeping your New Year's resolution?
Yeah, I quit smoking, quit drinking, and quit caring.
Nice.
Hey, did you ever start learning a new language?
Yeah, I finally nailed down my choice. It had to be something obscure to set me apart. So I settled on this weird language from some other country I'd never heard of.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's called Mandarin.
Mandarin? You mean Chinese?
No. Mandarin. It's from the country of Manda.
No, it's one of the two versions of Chinese, the other being Cantonese.
Well, fuck. Well, then I'm gonna go with my second choice, Klingon.
I tried to speak French to impress women. Didn't really work. Probably helps if they also speak French. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. Cow, wake up!
Oh, whoa.
I need a wee. Pass me the cap.
No, no, I've got my apple juice in there.
That's not apple juice, mate.
Oh, for God's sake! Oh, we need money, Neil. I'm a man of luxury. I'm used to 2-ply.
All right, fine. I think I have a plan. See, this is gonna be easy.
I don't know. Breaking into a police station seems stupid, even for us.
Not with these disguises.
Oh, these are not proper police uniforms.
Yeah, they are.
They're for stripping.
No, they're not.
Cops don't wear booty shorts.
It's fine. We'll just sneak in the vent there and come out in the evidence room. You know, it's like full of guns and drugs, cash. It's like a candy shop for blokes.
Will there be actual candy?
No.
Oh, forget it then.
Oh, come on. If you help me steal 10 grand, I promise to buy you a Mars bar.
Deal.
Okay, you first.
Why?
You know, women and children first.
Oh, right, yeah. It's a bit tight in here. Oh, smells like our dumpster.
Hey, I bought that bottle of Febreze.
Yeah, and we drank it.
Oh, yeah. Do you see anything?
Well, there's a massive rat nibbling on my nose.
Yeah, no, I meant through the vent. Oh, it's one of my dick.
Oh, yeah, I see a copper. Oh, now he's looking at me.
Oh, shit.
Oh, now he looks angry.
Fuck, move, move.
Oi, there's tramps in the walls.
We are not tramps.
Shut up, move.
Oh, I think I see it.
The evidence room?
Is it going to have a bunch of people half naked in it?
No, that's a changing room. But let me double check. Move, move. Oh, God, you might have told me there were blokes in it. Jesus, keep moving.
Oh, this one looks good.
Yeah, you see some guns? Jewels?
Family jewels? Another changing room.
Jesus, is this a police station or a country club?
Oh, shit, they're looking at us.
Run!
Carl, I'm in a vent.
Just move, dickhead. Get out.
Oh, this might be the one.
What do you see?
A big bag of flour, some oregano, I think.
Yeah, that's the one. Any coppers?
Oh, just a bloke sleeping in a chair.
Okay, be quiet. Open the vent. Easy. Easy!
Oh, wow. It is like a candy store. Look, there's loads of Skittles here. Yum. Tastes a bit funny.
Those are Oxycontin.
Well, they're very Moorish, whatever they are.
Stop eating them. Keep quiet. Grab the cash.
Oh, somebody just spat blue paint at me.
Shit. Oh, no, the bag was booby-trapped. Oh,
boobies? Where?
Oh, not that kind of...
What are you two doing? Bit cold for shorts, lads.
We're undercover, mate, as strippers.
I had to do that once. Oh, not for work. My wife was just bored. Carry on, then. Fancy a cup of tea?
Yeah, 2 sugars, please.
And milk?
Oh, no, just the 2 sugars. No tea either.
Okay. And how about you?
Oh, I'm fine, yeah.
And just to let you know, lads, if you're going to rob a police station, don't do it on my watch. I'm too fucking old to care.
Is he coming back?
I don't know, but let's get the feck out of here.
Oi, you two!
Shit, it's the bloke from the vent. He's in the vent.
Oh, quick, out of door.
Oh, he's got my arm.
Oh, shit, Nicole.
Never mind. Thank God for stripper shirts.
Oh,
which way?
Oh, shit, maybe this way. Oh, no, that's an interrogation room. Oh, I think I've been here before. This way.
Oi, stop.
Oh, bollocks, run, mate.
Oh, good job, they haven't got guns.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Fucking tasers.
Oh, run, you gimp bastard. Freedom.
I think the oxyclotin is clicking in.
Into the sewers. We'll be safe there, except from infection. 20 grand, Carl! I can't believe it! Finally! I'm buying you a family pack of Mars bars!
Oh, I wouldn't mind some more Oxycontin too.
Anything you like, mate. Anything you like. Woohoo! Errol, matey!
Alright, Neil. What are you doing this time?
Nothing, mate. I'm here to spend.
I still haven't shifted those Korean computers you sold me.
What's wrong with them? They're just like the Samsung ones.
Samsung isn't from North Korea.
Well, it's all good, you know. Anyway, I'm here spending money. I want that knife, a crowbar, a pair of bolt cutters. I'll take all of that porn, that guitar, and another guitar for after I smash the first one like I'm in The Who, and all of those Polly Pocket toys for my collection. It's nearly complete.
Well, that'll be 500 quid, mate.
Jesus, and I'm the thief. All right, here you go.
Hey, this isn't real.
What?
This isn't the Queen on the money. It's clearly Gary Busey.
They do look alike, don't they?
No, it can't be.
Maybe that's why they didn't chase us.
But no, everything was going to change. I'd finally done it. No.
It's all right, Neil. You still got me.
My God, why? Someone tried to once give me a fake $20 bill. I told them, piss off. I'm not that stupid, Grandma. Next up tonight is the tour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the University of Bitter Canadians. My name is Christy, and I'll be your tour guide today. The proceeds of this tour go directly into duping more gullible middle-class teenagers in the future.
Excuse me, why does this tour start in the middle of a construction site?
I'm so glad you asked, gentlemen with the overpriced university hoodie. We want to show you the best of what this university has to offer, including its wonderful vision for the future. When you're constantly thinking ahead, the depressing present seems irrelevant.
Will you show us any of the historic landmarks that this university is known for?
Of course. On your left, you'll see a building that is over 40 years old.
Ooh.
Ooh! I remember this place back when I was a student. Oh, me and my friends, oh, we loved it. You know, there was the pizza, oh, the moldy walls, the hidden corners for fingering. Oh, loads of fun.
Well, it's due for demolition next year. Here at the University of Bitter Canadians, we find that nostalgia is toxic, and cramming students into massive residential towers is much more pleasing to our board members.
Yeah, I got a question. Where's the best place to get drunk and meet hot girls?
Great question, Brad. I assume that's your name because that's a very Brad thing to say. We have this amazing bar called the Armpit. You'll love it. A very Brad bar. You do need to show ID, but as far as I can tell, you don't actually have to be 19.
That's awesome. I love loose college girls.
No, Brad, we don't support that kind of sexist thinking. Did you not see how many consent posters we put up? You can tell we're true feminists from the amount of vagina-themed theater performances we have. Every student here, by the time they can leave, can draw a clitoris from memory.
Are there good places to study on campus?
Well, we have at least three libraries where we prioritize the students who are streaming Breaking Bad and Skyping their distant cousins. You'll have to go to one of our many coffee shops and pay out the ass for your lattes to deserve that comfy couch and outlet for your Mac.
I'm sorry, but why are you telling us all this, Christy? This tour doesn't actually make me want to send my child to your school.
Well, I don't actually get paid enough to care about doing my job right, and this campus is crowded enough already without your stupid spoiled brats running around. Besides, you'll ignore everything I've said, because it's much more about the name of the university on your child's diploma than the actual experience they'll have. So hand over your thousands of dollars, and we can agree to keep the facade going.
I went to university. I didn't attend it. I just like to go there and heckle the fine arts students. Next up tonight is an advert.
Every patriot knows what today is. It's Super Bowl Sunday, the greatest live television event in the world. If you ignore the rest of the world, each one of us will put down his tools from his real American job, where the collar is always blue. He sits down with his beautiful Aryan wife and two born in wedlock kids and enjoys an American beer. The beer we sell.
Hang on.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of something here.
Yeah, yeah, we heard you. And I'd just like to say, you're making some painfully sweeping judgments about what a real American is. Some of us aren't married. Some of us prefer the taste of a white wine spritzer. Some of us would rather eat glass than watch football. Does that make us less American?
No, but as a brand, we are selling a lifestyle that our product fits into.
Right, right. A narrow view that doesn't reflect the beautiful and vast tapestry that is American identity.
Look, I just get paid $30 an hour to put on a fancy voice and trick people into drinking poorly brewed beer.
It's okay, it's okay. I've rewritten your speech for you. Just read it out, and I'll hold this door shut so the security people can't get in. 1 minute!
Fine. Every person who follows football knows what today is. It's Super Bowl Sunday, a live television event some people like to watch. People who work in labor-intensive jobs may rest for the day and spend it with their disappointing spouses and overly medicated children, and enjoys an American beer. Not a good one, just one he recognizes the label on. So he knows it's not that foofy beer from Portland. The beer we sell.
Better.
I don't drink beer. It makes me act like a dickhead. And I don't really need any help with that. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, featuring the voice talent of Caitlin Docking, Nick Rinker, Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Kenneth Tynan, and Simon Welton.
Guess right in by Sierra Wiley.
Alright, there you go, guys. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Do you guys enjoy that? Was that alright?
Is it obvious which one's mine?
It's a bit on the nose.
I don't know.
Which one showed the most, like, burning hatred?
Definitely that Super Bowl ad one. Tension was palpable.
That was more of a wider, like, criticism of, like, the sort of patriotism and, the American identity and all that nonsense, but...
Yeah. So you've realised that that's all a narrative.
Yeah. Well, that's, the point. But it makes a fair point in the sketch that, like, yeah, of course it is marketing and, you know, they understand that. But it's still, it's just, I find it still insulting in a way that they even want to perpetrate this garbage.
Who's to blame this? Is it the marketers or the people who believe the marketing? Because the marketers are just trying to sell products.
Yeah, I mean, if it works, then it's, it's sort of shame on you for allowing it to work by buying into it.
Unless you want to feel like part of a community, and that really does allow you to, like...
But, celebrate that you love football, that's fine, and talk about that. But just, I don't know, creating this sort of silly identity that goes along with it.
It is interesting, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, they do it in a lot of sports in weird ways, like,
cricket,
those bloody...
Everyone just wears white and yells, huzzah.
Eats those stupid little sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah. Wear big gloves.
So, but well done to Sierra tonight. She wrote the second to last sketch,
Of the Canadian
Club.
Yeah, so all complaints go directly to Sierra Wiley from UBC.
that's going to be Simon Welton at...
I think she was talking about SFU, man.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Come on.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's play some music, and we'll come back and we'll do the chit chat stuff. So first up tonight, we're gonna play Louise Burns and Who's the Madman. There you go, that's Japandroids with Near to the Wild Heart of... Is it mine or what's the last word? The Wild Heart of Life is what that one is, of the same named album. And before that was Louise Burns with Who's the Madman of Young Mopes. All right, so we're listening to the White Noise After Show. I'm Simon Weldon and I'm in with Sierra and Connor. So our first topic tonight, guys, should we start with something related to the show or... Current events.
Current events.
Yeah, okay. So our first topic tonight then is discussing whether Kellyanne Conway, who is Trump's like kind of publicist, like sort of a main sort of relations person, and Sean Spicer, who is the official press secretary for the White House, are those two people who have been making waves in the last 2 weeks with some very biting retort and alternative facts and lies, lots and lots of lies. But my question is, perhaps we need to look at this a bit more objectively. Is it their job to lie? As someone who's representing, you know, their job is to represent the interests of the government and the people they represent, and they're trying to, you know, put a spin on what is bad news, whatever it may be. You know, if obviously it's part of what they said they would do, and so, you know, they're not. There's no surprises what's going on, really. There shouldn't be, even though we all kid ourselves at one point that it wasn't going to happen, and all the mad shit he said wasn't going to go through. But then it turns out Steve Bannon is going to be like his chief advisor. So yeah, he is going to do all that mad shit. Like, we were worried about Mike Pence. We all overlook Steve Bannon, but that's not the topic right now. The topic is. Is it their job to lie?
It's not their job to lie, but they are spin doctors. I mean, their jobs are basically fake jobs. We don't need those people doing what they do. Kellyanne Conway is advisor to Donald Trump. That's a purely personal, professional relationship that doesn't exist in any capacity besides advising him. Sean Spicer, I get why you would have a press secretary to let people know about upcoming developments and stuff like that. I think he's got a bit overzealous with his job, but yeah. I mean, that was more necessary than Kellyanne Conway's job, for sure.
Well, apparently he's actually tried to repair some of the damage with, like, trying to actually sit down with different areas of the press and trying to, like, smooth over. And, like, even the White House has been like, yeah, dude, you're not doing very well. Like, you need
has
to sort
really?
It out. Yeah, they're like, you've got to stop being so aggressive.
Has he really, though? Or
it's not a ban.
Is he doing
it's not
his
a
job?
Ban.
Yeah, like, he's... You know, I mean, it's a hard job. It is a hard job. And I mean, it's even harder when you're working for Nutters.
Yeah. I think it's not their job to lie, but they are spin doctors. It's a real shame when they abuse their relationships in relation to the media, although one could argue how much the media put them on a pedestal to begin with in raising what they say to levels of akin to Donald Trump, even though their positions are much further below his in terms of genuine
but
importance.
But they are meant to be the the megaphone of the White House.
They
That's
are,
the
but
whole
he's his
point
own megaphone.
Right, okay, but this is a thought. Imagine, because I know it's hard to imagine yourself as like the Republican spin doctor.
No, I got it.
But let's say
Connor is a Republican spin doctor.
Let's imagine that you were the spin doctor for the Democrats, and you want to keep public opinion high on, and you want to keep them in power. You want to keep their agenda moving. They come up against controversy. Would you be willing to go out there and bend the truth fucking hard to protect the interests of the party you prefer?
I think that's the job of any public servant to an extent. And they're not technically public servants in the strict sense of the word, but they are working in the interests of their party and their president for their country. And I know from when I was working in government, there's definitely an incentive to kind of be very, very careful about any sort of like negative thing you say about, well, any party really. But you have the opposition to hopefully limit to limit kind of the domination and the monopoly of the party in power. Sorry. But I mean, if they're doing their job right, surely they are trying to have their party be seen in the best light possible and their leader. I just think that they should be doing a better job of trying to sort of smooth over all of the tension. And it seems like they're just furthering this idea of aggression and discord that's between the Democrats and the Republicans right now.
But it's what... There's just so much lying, though. There's just so much, like making up the names of massacres. Releasing a list...
She apologized for that.
Releasing a list of 75 underreported terrorist attacks.
Which
included the Paris attacks, St. Bernardino. Like, the biggest attacks we've
ever... That didn't include all the other terrorist attacks that coincidentally weren't committed by Muslims or weren't committed by Muslims to Muslims. Ooh.
It's just despicable.
Let me correct. I don't think it's their job to lie. I think it's their job to do what they can with the truth to put themselves in the best light possible. But when they're directly going against things that are accepted as quantitative facts, then that becomes super difficult when anyone can just be like, actually, that's not the case. I Googled it and within half a second, I found out that you are wrong. Like, surely you're paid enough and he's got enough advisors both Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer, that they should be saying things that are actually true. Are they all that, like, philistine and anti-information,
Yeah, it just feels so naive because it's like, it's not distorting the truth. It's barefaced lying.
Yeah.
It's not even hard to, as you say, like a simple Google search or, you know, a request of information and we could answer all these things. It's ludicrous.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how, like, any layperson in America can have any, like, respect for the government right now. Because I know when I was younger, looking on the American elections or the political scene, even though, we can look back, and even during the time a lot of people disliked Bush's presidency as a kid, you don't have that kind of political awareness to find issue with it, especially when you're growing up in a conservative household. But you're like, oh, okay, he seems like a pretty respectable person. Like, he seems like he knows what he's doing. And
he's working for Americans.
Yeah, like, he's got that information behind him where at least he's trying to do the best he can with the right information, however, partisan that may be. But I feel like anyone looking at Donald Trump's presidency right now and any of his supporters can just, like, see the such issue with it and such the just, like, obvious falsehoods that he's spouting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that dissimilar to the Bush era at times. Like, we had some of the biggest lies ever in terms of the WMD reports and things like that. Like, there's obviously, like, huge flaws in that, and it's easy to look back now and see it a bit rose-tinted.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have this surreal moment, well, I say surreal, nightmarish moment the other day when I'm watching an interview between Trump and Bill O'Reilly, and Bill O'Reilly is the voice of reason. Yeah. What is the world coming to when Bill O'Reilly is the voice of bloody reason?
But that's the thing, right? So I mean, in taking Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer, like, there are plenty of other officials, cabinet choices that Trump's made that I really want to be, like, honest, hardworking, diligent, and not lie. Those two guys, like, their job is to spin. Like, that's their job, is to make a narrative. And considering he has a terribly low approval rating, considering he doesn't know what he's doing, hence all the drama at airports and stuff, they can't go, oh, I'm sorry, Donald's a bit sorry for what's happening, because that just compounds everything. They can't avoid questions, because that also just makes them look like they're avoiding questions and compounds everything. They have to come out
fighting.
But they
do avoid questions. They do. Like, well, they do, but she plays these, like, gymnastics. Like, it's insane if you watch her answer a question. She'll go from answering the question to talking about something completely different in about two sentences.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
even people we like will do that.
Yeah.
I know. It's a typical thing, but, like, she is, like, the master of it. Like,
which is why she's in that position.
I thought Betsy DeVos was the master of that.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean, that's another one. Jesus Christ. The Betsy DeVos. Yeah, that family.
Mike Pence is a bad guy, apparently.
I can't believe that was 50-51 with only Pence breaking the tie. Yeah.
I mean,
he wasn't
going to turn it down, was he? But,
yeah. But
you think one more Republican who had a bit of an issue.
Right, but
just
if you,
like,
saw her donation list, her family's given millions of pounds.
Just
in the last election cycle, she gave Rubio $100,000. Like,
I didn't realize that her brother was Eric Prince, who started Blackwater, the mercenary company that went under. It was like whoa, red flag. I'm not saying that she's there for her brother, or that even he's
scandal,
working, but, like, it's like, whoa, that's a bit close to, like, scandalous.
Yeah.
Like, hello.
Yeah, it's
like, weird. But yeah, like, ultimately, I think other people have a more of a job in being honest. Like, other people, like, people, the Secretary of State, all the employees who he's put into important positions to actually run the country, I really need them to be honest. Because they're the people who make the difference. Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer aren't making a difference. They're just smoking mirrors.
That's true,
but the public's opinion and how that's dictated by press secretary and personal advisor, right? That's really important. And I mean, if the public has no respect for these people and they have no respect for the media, there's just, like, you're even further growing that divide, which is exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing.
Yeah,
totally. All right, let's play another song. We'll come back with a new topic. Next up tonight is Kelly. Is it Kelly Fleming, I think? Oh, Kelly? I don't know. Kelly Fleming with Wishing Away.
Disappear.
right, there we go. That was actually Ecologic, which is the first track of that album. But yeah, we'll maybe play the second track next week because it was pretty cool. Our second topic of the night is related to our show. We had that HBO sketch where he was being enticed to put some boobs into his Holocaust movie.
Nudity.
So yeah, curious question: is nudity like relevant in film and television? Like, is it important? Like, do we need nudity? Because like, sometimes it feels necessary, but sometimes you watch Game of Thrones, things like that, or like, you know, they go to a strip bar and you just get a one tit on CSI or something, and you're like,
well, it's like, yeah, a bit contrived.
Yeah, feel, you're like, is that necessary? Like, what's that about?
I feel like it definitely can have a place. It can easily be over gratuitous. But I think that there is like a good thing in that it can add an extra kind of human layer to things and something that can kind of just skim the surface. And then it's actually like, oh, okay, yes, that is humans in our natural form, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, if it says something about the character, for example, like in the show Transparent, one of the characters will be nude at times, but it's like pointing out her like sort of free spiritness and wanting to like be nude. And like, or, you know, I think maybe if you're in a scene and there's two people in a bed together, it says something about them if they're above the sheets.
Yeah, and it adds a nice bit of intimacy, and you feel closer to the characters. Or like, there's that scene in Lovesick where Dylan's stripping down because of a bet, and then there's like a character development moment between him and like the co-star Evie, right? So it's like that. I feel like has a point to it. But in Game of Thrones, when it's just like, oh yes, we've walked into this whorehouse, and here are these two women making out, and it's like, okay. It's like even someone who has no problem with that, it's just kind of like, why is this here? Like, am I watching porn or am I watching a movie?
I know. It's for me, it's like putting anything irrelevant into a scene in any movie or TV show. Like, you know, everything you write in a script is meant to say something and be important. Yeah. Shouldn't be filler ever.
It just has to add to the story rather than taking away.
Yeah.
To me, there's two things I have opinions on. I agree with you. There can be reason that it could enhance character, can enhance a certain development. But for the most part, whenever I see, I think it's gratuitous because it's always female nudity. It's never male nudity.
I think if there's going to be some boobs, there better be some dong.
Yeah,
well,
exactly. Like, it just seems fair. It's like you could subscribe to the idea of beauty is always feminine. You know, it's not, you don't have masculine beauty. And perhaps that's an idea that's shifting these days, but that is the traditional idea. But also, a lot of films and TV shows will be able to add an R rating to their program if they include nudity, which makes it seem a bit more, gives it a bit more
risque.
Yeah, as a bit of a scale, adds a bit more, I think, sort of an emphasis or a sort of significance, because it sounds a bit more like taboo almost.
What perplexes me though is that you have this really weird imbalance in North American censorship, in that you have things like nipples not being allowed on cable television, but you can show like an episode of CSI where they show someone's head being blown to pieces by a bullet, and that's fine at 4 p.m. And I think there's something wrong in society if something as natural as nudity is more frowned upon than like the worst parts of our nature.
I think that says something huge about American culture that you can notice as soon as you go there, and it's like the over commodification of sex and of nudity and of it being this kind of thing, like a high drinking age, right? So people are idealizing this idea of drinking and not drinking until they're 21, but you know, you're probably doing some sort of binge drinking illegally before then, obviously. But then it's this thing that you've always put on a pedestal, and you get there and then it's not living up to those standards, and you know, there's that discord between that. And I feel like in the way that you have the sort of clash between European versus American ideas of sex and nudity on stage, it creates a very like negative, unhealthy relationship with this fear of the naked body or fear of even just like breasts, which is kind of strange, I find.
It's funny because like they both, yeah, they try to make it taboo, but they also inundate you with it your whole life, which is this weird like paradox.
But
yeah,
it's because you have the paradox of America, which is a land of the free, built by Puritans. So
yeah.
that's the problem is, you know,
we should uphold Christian values whilst you should be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then guns are just scattered around everywhere and it's totally, you know, fine to have these like terribly gory films that 12-year-olds are going to. That's
yeah. I mean, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with watching violent films. I've watched violent films since I was a kid. I don't have any desire to be violent towards other people because of that.
But perhaps if someone already had that predisposition to being violent, that would exacerbate
this is the ongoing argument forever with psychology. I've written a few papers about that in class, and it always comes down to is there's some research that will sort of suggest there's a correlation between violence and watching violent things. But is that just a correlation of and I think it makes a lot of sense, just as much sense, that people who are inherently violent people then gravitate towards violent media.
But if that weren't the case, if there wasn't a correlation, or at least not a strong correlation between those two, why would you find it problematic that there was such violence being shown in films?
I just think that it normalizes it a little too much that I think, especially if it's when you imbalance these two things, if both of them were freely available and everything was, equally open, then it would be okay. But it's the fact that there's this disparity that makes it disturbing, I think, because you do have cultures like Japanese culture where violence and sort of sexualization are very apparent in their media, but I think it works for them. It seems to be that, it's healthy, they don't have high crime rates,
suicide rates though.
Yeah, but that's
tall buildings.
Yeah, I don't think that's got anything to do with sort of violence in the media though. That's partly to do with a culture, sort of this, suicide.
Honor culture.
Yeah,
sort of,
the honor culture thing, that's a lot to do with it. And also their work culture. Their work culture is you work 60 hours a week or more. And
also there's this idea of not displaying your emotions. And so people are very private. And so you might not know that someone close to you is struggling a lot because the culture prioritizes keeping those things hidden.
But there's a bit of a misnomer there in that you may be private to the world, but to your partner and to your family, I think there is still closeness and intimacy, and you have to be careful because
I can't remark on that.
Yeah,
I can
collective
only speak
cultures,
on, yeah.
Collective Eastern cultures are typically quite collective, and therefore, actually, even their sense of identity. It's really interesting if you do fMRIs of people's brains and you ask a Western person to think about themselves. The parts of the brain that light up are sort of related to thinking of just you as yourself. But the way that a Asian person, typically their brain would light up in a way that when they think of the self, they're actually thinking of themselves and their family and their people around them. Like they have a different sense of the self because of the collectiveness of culture. And I just think that's very curious.
Just to play devil's advocate here and slightly returning to a point I think you were making a couple minutes ago in terms of the disparity between violence is okay but nudity is not. I wonder how much there is also the idea of the reaction to it in the sense, and there's a lot you could say about why the reaction might be what it is, but in violence, you sort of say you don't see violence and then go out and start mass shooting. Perhaps it's occasionally that happens, and the United States seems to happen a lot more often than other places. Big country, gun laws. I think there's many reasons.
It's access to weapons is what it comes
down to. Yeah, so I don't think you could just say it's American culture exactly. But it doesn't seem like there's an immediate correlation between all the violence on TV and film and then violent acts outside. But then you wonder, what's the reaction to nudity? Is it
My main point of that is that I think it's an imbalance. It's a distortion of what morality should be, in my opinion, in society, in that we celebrate sexualization. We don't think of it as this dirty, horrible thing. Like it's so natural and so part of who you are that you're just lying to yourself. When you suggest that, when you try to bottle it up
But it is gratuitous as well, though, is it not? So just to play devil's advocate, I'm thinking you see some nudity on the screen, whatever, and so you're a bit of a you're a bit horny, whatever. Maybe you screenshot, save picture, you masturbate to it, or you start making bodily comments. You start judging people based on their appearance, a very intimate appearance, nonetheless. Where does that fall ethically? Is it if you want to masturbate to something like that? Is that whatever, you're an individual, or does that objectify the person who's on the screen? And if you comment on Twitter and you're, so-and-so, those boobs are too small, whatever. I think people will shame Lady Gaga for a halftime ball performance. Yeah. I don't get why you care. But some people do. And so is that because of cultural values that have suggested that it's taboo and therefore people try to be a bit edgy? And if there was more nudity on screen, perhaps they'd normalize it and people wouldn't make a big deal about
Maybe. It's partly to do with, I think, the sort of nudity we do have, in that we don't have enough variety of nudity on television. You tend to see one type of body type on television nude, especially in females. And that is... the major problem, I think. I think if you saw more variety, and you're starting to, but if you become, you know, because I think a lot of people aren't really in tune with, like, what is beautiful about a lot of different body types. Like, they have a very one-track mind in beauty, and they can't appreciate the nuances and, like, you know, just different types of beauty. And there's so much variety, and you could, if you take the time to appreciate it, you can see beauty in a lot more places than you realize. But people are just very quick to just basically, it's like built conditioning, though. They've been conditioned to think that this one particular type is the only thing that is ever beautiful, and that's just such a incorrect way to look at the world, you know, not just in sex but in everywhere. Like, you have one flavor of life that you love, and you love the taste of, you know, whether it's food, art, culture, but you can always find appreciation in other places if you look and you listen and you try and you open up yourself.
That was quite profound, Simon. I think
wrong.
I think there's an interesting idea about celebrities, and Connor, you're bringing up how it was interesting that you had Lady Gaga up there, and people are like, oh, she's got a tiny bit of, like, extra tummy fat. And I know Britney Spears, when she came out in, like, 2007 VMAs or something like that, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But there are big issues of commenting on celebrities' bodies, right? I think it's because it's, you know, you put the celebrities on a pedestal because you're the same reason, you know, you're watching the reality shows. It's like you want to have this insight into a life that you can't live, and you want to have that fantasy created for you. And when these characters of your fantasy, that those idolized individuals are kind of brought back, almost back down to your level, and you see the more human side of them, you see that they have flaws, you see that that they're not perfect, that their bodies, you know, are going to deteriorate in the same way as everyone's, that it's kind
change,
of breaking that fantasy for you. And I would hope that would happen more, but I don't think that's Hollywood style. And
no.
I wish it was more open and more diverse, and I think there are some really positive movements that encourage that, but unfortunately they're just taking so long to really gain any traction.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of things, it becomes a generational shift. You can't change things overnight, and the older people are, the harder it is to change their opinion and their attitude. It's children. That's why in any great dictatorship, they go after the teachers and the priests first, because the kids are the ones you can actually make a difference with.
I hope they're trying to introduce some more body positivity, things like that, into schools.
Absolutely.
Because I know, like, when I was in elementary,
Betty
middle...
boss will not do that.
Yeah,
oh.
Not in the States. Though you could, under her rules, you could set up your own, what do they call it? What's the
charter school?
Charter school, where that's the thing. But also, do remember, education in America is a state issue, really, more than a federal issue. So don't get too carried away there.
That was me.
Similar in Canada, yes? So with provinces?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's
or
completely
even more
provincial.
Devolved.
It's, yeah, like, and I actually, yeah, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have a couple more minutes. I think we got time for one more topic. We'll play one song. We'll come back. If we don't get kicked off, we'll do one more topic. But
we'll just keep on talking all night.
Yeah. All right. Next up tonight is Heat, and this is City Limits. We're back. No one's kicking us off yet, so we're going to keep going. All right, so our next topic tonight is related also to something in our show, Sierra's sketch about universities. And the question we want to pull out of that is it the university's job to provide students with a, in quotation marks, experience?
To curate the university experience.
Yeah. Is that their job? Sierra, I feel like you might have an opinion on this. Do you want to go first?
Well, I think it's a very North American idea that there should be an experience that goes along with your academic life, because perhaps you can comment on this a little bit, Simon, but I know in my conversations with Europeans, it's mostly Europeans, yeah, and them talking about how it's totally just an academic thing when they go to university. They maybe live at home and they live in an apartment in the city and there's no sporting events.
I thought it was just drinking in England, as far as I could tell. It just like...
Yeah, but that's not a university. That's just general.
Well, from what I've heard, the UK is kind of in the middle ground between Europe and North America. In on the continent, it's kind of like, the university is in the middle of the city and it's totally... there's nothing special about it being a campus at all, and you just go there to take classes.
Right.
Maybe you know people, maybe you have friends, but only because you've been in the same classes, not because you're in clubs and you're in parts of sports. But I think there's something really nice in a way about the university trying to curate an experience, and it's one of the reasons that so many people want to go to university had they not been academically inclined to otherwise. It's all about, oh, you know, my glory days back when I was in college, you know, I played for that football team, or I met my friends in this, like, in this club. But it can easily kind of...
Does it not feel a bit forced a lot of the time, though?
Exactly.
Like,
that's what I'm getting at.
Spirit days and
even
block parties. And
hey, block party is good when there's some good bands playing.
It's trying to...
When was that? I missed that.
It was at least 2 years ago.
It's trying to boil down like tens of thousands of students into a common universal experience.
It's ludicrous.
It tries to make you feel like this other when you don't feel like doing the same thing. Like the least common denominator or most common denominator.
I don't
want
to climb a fecking wall for the last time, guys.
And then it's like I feel ashamed when I go on my... Facebook feed and I don't want to take part in that, like I'm some sort of loser, like I'm some sort of outcast. And it's like, when in reality it's like I just enjoy kind of hanging out with a few friends who are more likely to enjoy the same things I enjoy.
Well, that's would be my argument, is that I think it's your job to create your own experience. Like, you know, we go on a radio show every week and write sketches and perform, and
we try to write sketches.
Yeah, like
they don't get taken or accepted or whatever, but you know, we try.
Connor's never butthurt at all about anything related to sketch writing.
He just wants me to love him. It's okay.
I think you love feeling a little bit of a wank, you know.
Oh, I don't need to reach around on it.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I think that that is your responsibility. If you want to have an experience, go out and get one. It's university. I don't think it's fair to a lot of people to spend a lot of money on things that are so narrow as that. I think it's good that we have clubs and they support that in some sense. But even then, it's a bit like having governments fund art. It becomes a bit weird in that then they're dictating kind of
what's
where the funds go. So they dictate what's important in art, which seems ludicrous to any, to most people.
I feel like universities should kind of try, because university, presumably, like if we're gonna take the understand that university isn't just a capitalist like sort of product to make money and enhance its prestige.
Yeah, you could look at it more cynically.
It should at least try to give you an experience, whether it succeeds or not, but try to give you an experience that says, this is good why you came here. Like, we want you to come away from UBC, you know, feeling like you're empowered, feeling like you've met some amazing people, or whatever, you know, whatever characteristics or ideas that they believe that they want the university to exude. And I think they should try to do that. But there's a limit at which, yeah, that they have to curate every aspect of it. And of course, some kids, especially at a big university, some kids will get into school spirit and some people won't, like maybe a bit like us. And so then it becomes a part of, like, how much are you missing out on the narrative that isn't in the school creating it, but they have to endorse it because it's the school, versus just the other kids who want a big preppy, woo, like, we're all together, all community sort of feel. Whereas a small university, you can probably get away with having a good experience because it's, because, yeah, you do get to know more people.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was saying when he went to school, he became an electrical engineer, and there was like 12, 15 people in his class, and it was the same people the whole time for every class. And so he got quite close to everybody then, because, yeah, he spent ages and ages with each other. Whereas in like a big uni like this, we look, you know, in my major, I'm finally in like fourth year recognizing like maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen people.
I think I know less people now than I did 3 years ago.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the thing. Like a couple of people that were a bit older than me that I met in second year, they're all gone now. So it's like, yeah, it's quite weird. Like, it doesn't feel that intimate. Whereas I know, like, guys and some people maybe in, like, the fine arts faculty, which is a lot smaller faculty, do have a lot more, like, sort of camaraderie and also the sort of education they have where they're, like, you know, if you're doing drama games and things like that, it's a lot easier to open up and, you know.
Yeah,
it's like having a good discussion group. You tend to have one or two people from your discussion group each time you have one that you, like, sort of remember if it's a quite intimate discussion group, yeah. I find.
I always struggled to find the middle ground between being very much just like a complete individual in a class besides like my penchant for talking to professors all the time and asking lots of questions in class. But in university, like, oh, do I want to go to those parties that they plan? Do I want to be part of the clubs? Do I want to do this? Or, you know, really buying into this fantasy of this idea that, you know, you'll have more fun if you do these things that your friends are doing. If you go to all the Facebook invites, it's like that you're going to really have that university experience that's always like that in quotation marks university experience. But I feel like that's somehow cheapened because it's the secondhand experience that someone has put upon you. And yeah, like you guys were saying, you should have the freedom and the choice to pick what you want to do for your experience.
It just can't help but feel contrived to me.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, it's just like it always end up being at those things and being like, am I having fun? I don't think I'm having fun.
And then you drink another shot. And you're like, maybe no beer.
And then you black out, and you're like, wait, why did I go? I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, and then you get drunk to be there, which is such a if you have to be drunk to be somewhere, it's not really somewhere you enjoy being. Like, it's like when you're in a club and you're like drunk, and then they like turn the lights on, and it looks like a cow shed.
Oh
and
yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
What the? If the lights
right
were on when I walked
set,
in.
Yeah.
I'd have walked straight back out.
Yeah.
It's even more sad when I have to get drunk at my own house to enjoy it.
Okay.
But yeah, as maybe a concluding remark, I feel like, yeah, the university should try to give a certain experience, should give an impression at least to people who come here that it's worth coming here.
Mm.
But no way are they responsible for trying to curate the 4 year or plus experience for 40,000 individual students who are all coming here for different reasons and are going different places. There's no way that that's achievable, and so don't put too much effort in trying to seem like you bother. Like, yeah, do try to have principles. Do try to give students a good place to live, a good opportunity to learn,
yeah.
Good opportunities to meet career advisors and stuff like that. Sure, do that. Great. But don't try and, like, make everything, like, school spirity and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, 100% of your social life needs to be because of the university.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sod that. All right, that's the end of our show. We will be back next week with some more sketch comedy and all the other fun stuff. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Good time.
No worries. My pleasure. All right. We're going to leave you with Century Palm. And this is These Walls from Meet You. See you next week.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And thank you wherever in the universe that you may be listening from, because radio waves are all over the place, so maybe you're even listening from another planet. I don't know. Who knows, right? Okay, so now I'm getting all... I haven't had much sleep, so I'm getting a little bit nutty here. So anyway, we're talking today with Karuna Caton, and he is the author of The Misleading Mind, How We Create Our Own Problems and How Buddhist Psychology Can Help Us Solve Them. Welcome back to the show, Karuna.
Thank you.
So we were talking about, you had mentioned that if you're just out to help people or help people feel better, you're not really making that much difference in the world. And it's really all about inner change and the process of growth, not just distraction or feeling better. And I'm looking at something.